Greetings, and welcome to the I.O. Tower, a podcast for all things Tron. I'm your host, David Fleming. As listeners of this podcast know, over the last 4 years, I've had the honor of talking with many of Tron's creators about their experiences on the Disney lot, friendships formed, skills learned, and techniques discovered in creating a once-in-a-lifetime film. In 1982, this young crew of filmmakers rendered a look, a story about computers, video games, and our relationship to emerging technology that, truly, no other film since has accomplished. Tron inspired so many up-and-coming artists, musicians, television producers, and those in the nascent field of digital media. One only need reflect on Tron-inspired art of the past 40 years to see how Tron found its way into the hearts and minds of countless creators. I consider myself to be among them. Much has transpired in the microcycles of the past 4 decades, and not all of it good. Sadly, we've lost many of Tron's cast and crew. In the past 3 years alone, David Warner, who portrayed Dillinger and Sark, and Cindy Morgan, our beloved Laura and Yori. We also lost Rowlett Woods, film cell coordinator, and most recently, animation camera operator Glenn Campbell. I wish I could have talked with each of them on this podcast, but I am humbled and honored to say that I did get to meet and hang out with Cindy, Rowlett, and Glenn, and each of them were just the greatest people, so kind and encouraging to be with. Time marches on, and technology advances. From the standpoint of 1982, it would have been hard to foresee where we've gotten today. It feels we are nearly at a point where Tron might be, well, real. Want to go inside the computer? A VR headset makes this easy now. Want the programs to come outside to us? Alexa, Siri, ChatGPT, all getting more lifelike all the time. In today's episode, I want to revisit Tron. How did the idea of it all, ahead of its time, come to be? What does Tron mean today in a world full of social media and tracking algorithms? Who or what are the users and programs now? And who is fighting for whom? Did Tron's young director, Steven Lisberger, know where all of this might go? I think maybe he did, as evidenced in Topeka, a thrilling new sci-fi novel co-written by him and Robert Churchill. My fellow conscripts, we have scored. Today's guest is Tron's writer and director himself, Steven Lisberger. Let's ask him all of this, and oh, Tron Ares? Do tell. Welcome to the I.O. Tower. Thank you, Stephen, for talking with me on the I.O. Tower. It's a real honor to have you.
It's my pleasure to be here, David.
So, Stephen, when you made Tron, computer animation wasn't even really a thing yet. It was only available to a few people with the right equipment, and it certainly wasn't featured in any motion pictures to date, really. How did your interest in computer animation begin?
It started with a neon character. And then seeing Pong and a sample CG reel from Magi, it all came together back in the late 70s in Boston. this all happened before LA, while my studio was working on Animal Olympics for NBC. In some ways, I think if I had been part of the Hollywood mindset from the start, Tron wouldn't have happened at all.
Really?
Tron had to come from the outside, from outside the system, like Flynn did. Hollywood has a history of too often devouring originality, like sprouts. Animal Olympics got me thinking about the ancient games in the Colosseum and gladiatorial games, and Spartacus was always one of my favorite films.
Cool.
An animation studio thinks in terms of unique characters and arenas, so we came up with our neon warrior, and we called him Tron for electronic.
Nice.
We put him on our studio logo and even leased him out for rock and roll radio ads in New England. I wrote the earliest rendition of Tron with the working title Future Bowl, which had been the title for a possible animated sci-fi Super Bowl special. That futuristic gridiron quickly became the Tron grid. I visited Magi in Elmsford and also Ed Catmull and Albie Ray Smith on Long Island. They were the co-creators of Pixar. It was an exciting time back east. We shared a secret. CG and computing were the future, and no one seemed to know it but us. This was all about 17 years before Toy Story, almost a generation. Before Disney, I also visited Xerox PARC in 1979 for research. This was after we moved to Venice, California. I know of two people who visited Xerox in September 1979. I was one, Steven Jobs was the other.
Wow.
3 years later, Disney would come out with Tron, and 5 years later, Apple would launch the Mac. By then, Xerox decided computers weren't worth pursuing. That gives you an idea of the zeitgeist of the day. We had opened another studio in Venice, California to complete Animal Olympics and moved ahead on developing Tron, hoping to make it as an independent feature. For financial reasons, it wasn't meant to be. The 1980 Olympic boycott was a disaster for everyone involved with the Olympics in any way. After living almost 75 years, I can say stupid politics is the norm. But it led to Disney taking the project on, and that really was the best thing that could have happened. It turned out only Disney could actually handle the scale and this degree of experimentation.
Wow.
What I saw at Xerox was not just the GUI interface or the mouse or the predecessor of the laptop. I saw the passion these cyber wizards had. These guys were all about overcoming limits and, in retrospect, blissfully naive.
Wow.
Let me go on a little bit more about the history and the technology.
Sure, please.
When my studio was no longer able to fund the production of Tron, Donald Kushner, my business partner, called Disney out of the blue. That one call led to Disney's front gate in Burbank.
Wow.
Tom Wilhite had just been installed studio head. He and I were both 29 years old. He had been appointed by Ron Miller. And speaking of overcoming limitations, Ron, Tom, Donald, and Harrison Ellenshaw had their share of what was going on in the studio. They took on the old guard who hated the idea of computers in the hands of artists.
Wow.
Wilhite says if he had more experience, he probably never would have tried to make it. But like me, he was another insider and didn't know better. My studio had developed everything before I walked into Disney's animation building the first time. I had my shooting script, concept art, storyboard, CG test reels, and budgets. Everything but money. That was all gone by that point. I was all in on Tron.
Wow.
I felt very at home at Disney. It's the studio I would have made if I could. It was hallowed ground.
Wow.
You could feel Walt's vision everywhere. The mind of an animator, imaginative but practical at the same time.
Cool.
The Disney story department and execs loved my script, but of course did some revisions, mostly in the real world, and asked for more film tests, which I did over the next few months. The test got a very positive response, and we got our green light. Shortly thereafter, someone handed me a fresh copy of the revised script. It had a production number on it. Never saw that before, and an old timer told me, "Congrats, that's what means you've got the green light."
Right on.
This is how I found out. No one told me. Disney asked what concept artists I wanted, and my dream team was complete. Mobius worked on designs and storyboards for months. If I had any talent, it was for choosing talent. And the great Sid Mead designed sets, vehicles, and costumes as well. They both did costumes.
That's amazing. Wow.
Working with them gave me the confidence I needed to take on the void. Lisberger Studio artists had designed earlier versions of everything, including storyboards before Sid and Mobius, but having these giants to rely on meant so much. I didn't want to hand these great artists a blank page. Too much time talking that way.
Right.
No matter how good our stuff was, and it was great, these guys always found a way to make it better.
Wow.
I knew their work was going to be next level, but I wasn't prepared for how fast they were. Maybe because they didn't have to start from scratch. I had known Richard Taylor, who worked with Robert Abel doing Levi commercials, knew him before coming to Disney. Abel's led the world in backlit animation effects, which we were all very excited about, especially if you were young in the 60s. And they were doing pioneering experimental work in CG at the same time.
Right.
They did the wormhole into the grid. Richard also worked as an art director at Triple I, the CG company that did the MCP. The fact that the backlit animation in Tron looks as good as it does and was done in record time is to a great extent due to the team of Richard and his scene coordinators that joined me at Disney for Mabel's.
Excellent.
No matter how demanding the work became or seemingly impossible, they handled it like pros. We were also very lucky that Jeff Bridges was looking for a gig.
Yeah.
Jeff was the only actor who loved how far out the story was.
Nice.
The very reason other actors passed was the reason Jeff did it.
Wow.
Jeff is not only a unique talent, but also fearless. It's difficult to understand that Disney at the time was like the castle in Sleeping Beauty, out of the mainstream. Most agents and actors would not take my calls. And if they finally did, when the word game came up, as in video games, forget it. Games are for kids, click.
Wow.
But we were lucky and got Bruce Boxleitner, Cindy Morgan, David Warner, and Bernard Hughes.
Nice.
I thank all of them for their commitment to plunging into the unknown. They didn't totally get computers or even video games and yet played their roles with believable conviction. Warner stood on our all-black stage under a spotlight and said his lines like he was back on the stage in London doing Macbeth. Only now he was talking about escapees from the game grid. Cindy was great with Jeff and Bruce. Cindy's character is with her new guy, Alan, but they need her old sweetheart, Flynn, to help them. It was a unique triangle. And Flynn never does get her back, in spite of being the user hero. And talk about a lack of believability. Her character, Laura, is a high-powered essential computer engineer at a big tech company in 1982.
Wow.
I guess it was just too far out to be believable.
Yeah.
Years before, we had hired several Disney-trained animators for Animal Olympics, and now, ironically, they found themselves right back at Disney working on Tron. Animators like Bill Croyer and Jerry Reese put their knowledge to good use pioneering CG with the light cycle sequence. Wendy Carlos wrote a score as far out as the film.
Yes.
I won't mention the hip musicians of 1980 that wouldn't think of doing a Disney movie back then. Funny to think of a very young Daft Punk watching Tron back in 1982.
Wow.
We all pushed the envelope together and were a creative army. At one point, 700 people were working on the film.
Man.
Some old-timers said it felt so exciting to be doing something totally new that it reminded them of when Walt was around.
Mm.
We created a vision that could be made no other way. Many of the people behind Tron aren't with us anymore. Sadly, I feel that loss more and more as time goes by.
Yes.
The timing in the making was amazing. The timing when it came out was not so amazing. I guess after all the entropy of the 60s and 70s, the disaster that was Vietnam and the Bacchanal of Woodstock, much of the public was desperate for some kind of reassurance.
Yeah.
And they got it with the Reagan years.
Yeah.
The film going public had been going to Disney Films for nostalgia, and we gave them a new virtual frontier at light speed. As Taylor would say, we melted the Naga hide off their loungers. But it must have been amazing to see the film when one was young and looking forward instead of in the rearview mirror.
Right.
Several cutting-edge films that summer went up against the same retro-longing zeitgeist. Leonard Nimoy called me when he saw it and told me you tore the envelope apart.
Wow.
Arthur C. Clarke said it was the key film of the summer.
Oh, my.
Just to set the record straight, because I get tired of reading crazy cost numbers. In brief, Tron cost $17 million. Between the box office and the game, paid for itself twice over.
All right.
And there's almost 20 minutes of CG. The glow suits were done with Codalus. Every frame of the live-action 70mm black and white film was blown up to a very large coatolith and colored with backlit gels. That is re-photographed and composited on one of a dozen VistaVision animation stands. The average frame has about 18 separate exposures.
Goodness.
For each color, for the glow, for compositing with the backgrounds and effects, some frames had double that amount of exposures. Many of the background sets in Tron were CGI blow-ups, not paintings. We're talking numbers over a million elements. Making Tron was a good example of overcoming limitations. On a practical level, it was basically impossible. There was no way to composite live-action actors into almost 1,000 shots of Tron World and do it in 9 months.
Wow.
Or to give it a unique look and vibe that fit this new world.
Yeah.
But we did it anyway. We leapt off a cliff and built an airplane before we hit the ground. The project and the tech brought out the best in us. We had no way to see computer animation moving. All we could ever see was one frame at a time. There was no low-res moving visual of the light cycles. In fact, there was no imagery at all. Just graph paper, and the bikes were added as numbers on the graph. Only when each digital frame was laboriously rendered and the image on the monitor was photographed by an animation camera one by one and finally projected did we see anything at all or see anything move. It was the Stone Age cave painting with pixels.
Wow.
Our computer's crude memories could only hold one rendered frame at a time.
Yeah.
After each frame image was photographed, it was gone, not stored in any memory, only on film. There was really not time or money for redos and reshoots. Maybe 5 to 10% was redone. Now one renders everything multiple times and it all takes twice as long.
Well,
AI art has gone beyond almost all limitations. So the final limit has become the cost of electricity and what the audience can sit through.
I relate so much of my life as a computer programmer and digital artist to the story of Tron, and to all the possibilities Tron put forth. What was it about computer technology that fascinated you and led you to create Tron?
To me, the computer screen of the late 70s was the largest blank canvas in history. I saw early CG and the digital frontier and felt like I had just landed on another planet. The engineers I met while doing research didn't seem to include many examples of characters, metaphors, or mythology in their early digital work and experiments. And their visuals were, by necessity, very rudimentary. But the potential was there from day one. Their digital passions helped to inform my characters and story. I didn't need them to be artists or imagineers. I had my own team and Disney for that.
What were you trying to say with Tron? Was there a particular message or theme?
Yes, there was a theme. The question Tron asks is, will our technology bring out the best or worst in us? And one way to think about that is with limits. Technology helps us overcome some limitations, but ironically, it also imposes new limits on us.
Yeah.
Limitations we might not realize at the time. In the film, Flynn is imprisoned by a world he created. He was faced with the challenge of testing his limits and living up to what the programs expected of him. He has to choose between saving himself or saving those that believe in him. Ultimately, his limitation was himself. In his case, his tech eventually brings out the best in him. Tron and Yuri also have to battle the master control's limitations imposed on all the programs that believe in the users. Tron breaks through the ENCOM's firewall with Flynn's help and sets out to help Yuri escape. It's a chain reaction started by Flynn. Talk about overcoming limitations. Yuri is a young woman in a tech world.
Yeah.
Once free, Yuri uses her navigation skills to help Tron and take on Sark and the MCP.
Nice. How well did the audience get it?
So an older audience at the time looked to Disney for nostalgia and reassurance. Young Gen Xers and some in my generation wanted to go beyond boundaries. Many parents wished for more limits, not less. So some loved it and some hated it. It has taken decades, I think, for us to think seriously about how our tech, especially social media, is affecting us, especially the young.
Right. Yes.
Too often it appears to bring out the worst. Another story character perspective on Flynn is this one, which is personal subtext for me. that is Flynn as a sort of tech shaman.
Hmm.
In the archetypical shaman myth, the shaman journeys into the other world to save the spirits of his ailing tribal members. Through this journey to the other side, he makes them whole again.
Interesting.
Alan and Laura are not doing well. They have lost their access. Digital technology does seem to have the power to take away our identities. I am not the first to think that. Flynn saves them in the grid world, and by so doing, helps them in the real world.
How well do you think this theme holds up today?
We swing back and forth between extremes, it seems. In the early days, tech was often perceived as 100% evil. Then it was marketed, and suddenly it could do no wrong. Now we are finding we are riding a tiger.
Hmm.
Often digital tools start out promising to be a boon to mankind and too often end up putting limitations on human potential and curiosity. One can't rely solely on technology to empower oneself. You have to find a way to access what you really are and might be.
Right.
Like programs reaching out to communicate with the users. We are the users. That comes with responsibilities. We have the wisdom that only comes with having a body and experiencing the joys and limitations of the real world.
Yeah.
Mother Nature wants to teach us common sense, empathy, and wisdom if we listen. Hopefully we gain the maturity that comes with aging over time. That's analog, not digital.
Nice.
Meanwhile, great advances in digital life can make one think there are no limits. It's a lie. Once one is dead, one is beyond limits. But if you are alive and have a body and live in the real world, one needs to work within some limitations.
Mm.
They can be a great benefit that brings out the best in us and makes life on Earth not just possible, but gives it meaning.
My guest is Tron writer and director Steven Lisberger. We'll be right back after this short break. If you're just joining us, my guest is Tron writer and director Steven Lisberger. With AI now going mainstream, do you think Tron is proving to be more prescient and relevant today?
We all have a kind of digital identity now. In that sense, the story came true. Tron presented the notion of users not just having a digital alter identity, but also thinking of them as agent programs whose purpose is to help us. The MCP ruled the internet of his day. That was the ARPANET. Stole and downloaded all he could from the users.
Mm-hmm.
AIs continue to download all of our info, but I never imagined back then we would be the ones feeding it to these silicon overlords as fast as we are and including as much of everyone's personal info as possible.
Definitely.
Users are still dreaming of a free and open system where they can access and control their personal data. That hasn't changed. The programs in the story think their world is real, controlled by the users, when in fact it's all a simulation. Now I hear some of us believe that this is the case of our reality, worlds within worlds. For me, this is a question best left to artists and philosophers, not science. Or as McLuhan said, what's a metaphor?
Right.
Apparently watching Star Trek at an early age makes one think this way. I don't know. I don't dwell on that one, but I do sometimes think about how the internet was originally promising communication, brotherhood, education, democracy.
Yes.
But now too often, in an effort to maximize engagement, it fuels our worst instincts.
Right.
I suppose some say we created the internet to help us get to better know our shadow side too. But the shadow gets its power from being hidden. Once in the light of day or on the screen, it usually turns out to be kind of boring and a cliche. And in a way, Flynn and Alan are echo of Jobs and Gates, but that wasn't intentional. I miss the idealism we shared back in 82. We were all in this adventure together, but we didn't anticipate the emphasis individually that came with every user as a customer.
What kind of program would Tron have to be today to fight for the users?
When I think of what Tron would be today, I think of a program who would work on improving himself. Change the world for the better by example, not by decree. We all want to see the plan. Be the change you want the world to become. It's the same challenge Flynn faced. Lead by example, not by decree.
Nice. In your mind, when you made Tron, what was a user then? And what is a user now? And against who or what forces today does the user need defending?
Difficult proposition. Difficult proposition at best.
Mankind always dreamed of creating some kind of rational society, a civilization that wouldn't spin out of control on some emotional binge or overreaction misled by envy and greed or prejudice or superstition. Somewhere along this journey, we decided with this technology, let's be free, free to follow our feelings, whatever they are and wherever they may take us. Aside from the obvious challenges that come with this attitude, there is another glitch in that full-bore emotion-based approach. Manipulation by fear and envy can be a very effective tool to control people who have liberated themselves from reality.
Yes.
And the web and social media is the tool that can be weaponized to do the job.
Yes.
How ironic to think machines that we always worried would dominate us with killer robots have now become essential by catering to our instincts. We are merging with a medium whose soft power is seductive and insidious. We have always enjoyed and paid for art and stories that made us feel intensely, but today programs are capable of that, and in some recent systems, it's been proven that they're doing that, and we don't understand how they accomplish this.
Yes.
We have found ourselves in an amazing but dangerous world, one that we created. It's the story of Flynn.
Wow. Stephen, is there the idea in Tron about equality, i.e. the differences and similarities between users and programs?
If Tron and the other programs are going to fight for the users, we owe it to them to be worth fighting for. If you reproduce, it means one has to live up to being what a parent is supposed to be, needs to be in the eyes and life of their child. Are we going to be the parent or the child in this new relationship with AI? Or is this going to be a Cain and Abel kind of deal? One of us, the user or the AI, has to be the grown-up, I think. When you look into the unknown, what you imagine and what you create is a reflection of you. By what you create, you learn about yourself, good and bad. And the longer you look into the void, the more you may reveal and discover. From this point of view, it can be a challenge for me to sit through some popular movies. Hollywood used to make A and B movies. The B movies were 100% exploitation. What made a movie an A film was that it always had some element that aimed higher than the obvious or the sensational. I don't know why they did that, but that is what made all the difference to me. Something to reach for. I have mentioned this to the next generation of filmmakers. When they do a Tron film, they just might reveal as much about themselves as Tron World.
In your thinking, how have the concepts of users and programs changed over time? Have the users today become in some ways programs?
Early on, the digital world seemed knowable. We figured we made it, so it had to be knowable. But now we are shocked to find somehow we have generated not a finite, totally knowable alt world, but another world that seems infinite, just as unsettling as the real world. Hell, maybe more so because it was supposed to be our backyard. But I try and look at it this way. The future is infinite. One has to try and get used to that fact because one way or another, we're all going there. Some aspects of the future cannot be defined no matter how much we try. And the only way to know what is going to happen is to be there. Art helps or should. Art isn't science. Science exceeds all limitations and we trash our climate, our life support. Creativity runs off the rails and we invent rock and roll and the bikini. Art doesn't really destroy civilization, although the critics often act like it does.
Yeah.
The merging of art and science seems beneficial to both. It's a good thing if artists can help us imagine where all this might go, what its potential is, and what might happen, both good and bad.
Yeah.
We need to kick science around before it kicks us around. Try and get some things roughed out before our thinking and imagination is fenced in by envy and fear or market share priorities. We certainly seem to have a never-ending desire to create another version of ourselves and make a copy of the real world. Cave paintings of animals and hunters were done in hopes it might help the hunters. This hasn't changed all that much. Will we figure out new and better ways to overcome our problems like climate change by supercomputer modeling? Will AI charge in like the cavalry and save us? Or compromise our ingenuity and backseat us? Will social media fulfill human potential or sell it back to us as a product? If Tron's theme was about tech bringing out courage and ingenuity to overcome limitations and set new ones, for us making the film, the medium was the message. We lived that theme every day when we were making the film. It was only the process of making the film that finally revealed what the film would look and feel like. Seeing the first CG footage of the light cycles race across the grid was life-changing for me. That may have been the widest my eyes have ever opened.
What message or experience do you hope viewers take away or have from Tron and its sequels in this day and time?
Disney felt at the time they had to try something new. It was extremely commendable of them to take on Tron, and it still is. I have enjoyed seeing how many other feature films over the years have echoes of Tron's story or design.
Yes.
Some have said the script was the start of a new genre, virtual adventure.
Yeah.
It is part of Disney's DNA to be first to define a fresh arena or come up with a new style and use experimental technology to do it. Walt knew how to inspire artists that way. Disney back then intentionally wanted to avoid Tron feeling like the usual homespun Disney family fare of the 60s and 70s, an approach that was running out of steam. But were families in 1982 ready for Disney to be so cutting edge? And maybe even more importantly, did film critics in Madison Avenue enjoy a Disney film that made them feel totally out of date? That was never supposed to happen, but it did.
Wow.
Were girls a major part of the Disney audience into video games in 1982? Did they dream of being like Laura, a top-tier software engineer navigating the system to delete a renegade AI? What kind of princess is that? But it turned out many of the young audience were in fact enthralled, took the film to heart and had been embraced anew like we did in making the film. I think some of the younger audience secretly enjoyed a story their parents didn't totally get.
Sure, yeah.
Bless their open minds, their multiple viewings soon paid for the cost of production, and the arcade quarters paid for the film a second time over. One of these guys was Jared Leto.
Ah.
And in the process, the story inspired a whole lot of careers. Maybe a few new companies and maybe a tech baron or two.
Yeah, for sure.
Tron came out 2 years before the Mac launched. That summer of 1982, Disney led the world in imagining characters, users, and avatars who would bring us the coming digital revolution in personal computers and the internet and virtual worlds, AI, the future video games, agent programs, and the potential of CGI to simulate everything and everybody. Try and picture any single company being a decade ahead in all these sectors now.
Wow, indeed.
The Tron Light Cycle Power Run ride at Disney World in Shanghai is for me an awe-inspiring reminder of Disney imagining where all of this was going long before Wall Street had a clue. The rides and the sequels remind me of the idealism we once felt about our technology. That is the legacy. It gives the sequels and the Power Run rides meaning. I have nostalgia for seeing the next generation go beyond their parents' and grandparents' limitations. Our future depends on them doing just that. They can wrestle with the future through fantasy and dreams before we all click unknowingly on submit and find ourselves on the grid without a light cycle.
Yeah.
And as others have said, we don't have to wait for trips to another planet or aliens. AI is alien enough. It is not us, and yet it is us.
This is a really tough one. I've had this question for years. I know many other fans have had this question as well.
How big is a grid bug?
Okay, cool.
This isn't going to be easy. If those grid bugs get us, we've had it.
Is it tiny, like a bug? Is it the size of a cat? Is it truck-sized? It's hard to know from their brief appearance in the film.
For me, it's a fractal-type deal.
Oh.
All sizes, theoretically, would be possible.
Oh, far out.
I think if you zoomed in, you might find a grid bug is made up of other grid bugs. It's grid bugs all the way down. John Norton created and animated that grid bug. He also came up with a recognizer, which was done by Magi. The grid bug had to be hand animated. It was a question of prioritizing our computers. Early on, Magi called and said they couldn't render the recognizer unless it had no curves. Okay, so that is why John made it all straight lines. One regret on Tron, I just wished we had another few months for the Tron team to jam with all the characters and techniques we invented. But that was not to be. But it happened intergenerationally, it turns out, which is very cool too.
Yeah.
We worked so hard to invent the tools to tell that story and barely had any time really to see what they could do.
Yes.
As far out as the film is, we were just getting warmed up.
Oh, man.
Look at what has come since then. We felt all that potential back in 1980.
I would love to hear, and I know a lot of Tron fans would love to hear from you, what advice or encouragement would you give to fans trying to write Tron-inspired stories or screenplays?
I think analog versus digital is as relevant as ever, and maybe analog and digital, how they can actually be combined, is more relevant than ever. I also find myself thinking about how is it that so many young people are so savvy with this technology so early on? Where else does that happen?
Yeah.
I've never been in an airplane where the pilot comes over and says, is there a teenager back there that can come into the cockpit to help out?
Yeah.
That amazes me. It's like our tech is mirroring our minds, how we think. I'm endlessly curious about that. You know, is the tech an invention or is it a discovery? We seem really to be getting jealous of what AI may be capable of, but I also wonder what happens if the AI becomes envious of us and how wonderfully organic we are.
You recently wrote a book with your friend and co-author, Robert Churchill. It's called Topeka, and it's a sci-fi novel set in the not-so-distant future. I read it, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh, cool.
I wanted to ask you, what motivated you to write it? And is it an evolution of your thinking from the original time of Tron?
No, it stands alone. It's a different vibe. It was inspired by Japanese anime, which made a big impression on me at the time.
Oh.
I met Jessica Chobot. She interviewed me on Tron, and we realized we both were really excited about Japanese anime. And
cool.
A story started to come together in my mind that was a little bit like Jess and my wife, Peggy, because the technology in the story would enable an older woman like my wife, Peggy. We've been together since 1969 in Woodstock. And Peggy and I were talking about what if she knew back when we were young college kids, everything that she knows today. We were talking about that, and the technology in the story enables this to happen.
Cool.
One of the lead characters is going to know a whole lot more at a younger age. So it got me thinking about downloading and what the AIs may allow to happen or want to happen. And it's got some other aspects to it that I think are timely, like climate change. So I was kicking this around, discussing it with my favorite sounding board, who is Bob Churchill. We've been friends forever.
Nice.
And eventually all those discussions and notes became this novel. It was just a lot of fun to write because unlike a screenplay, I could write as much description and as much dialogue as I wanted. And, you know, you just can't do that with a screenplay. So,
right,
yeah,
right.
It's kind of a as I say, it's my version of a Japanese anime film.
Steven, I am so glad and honored to be able to ask you directly. Tron Ares, the third Tron installment, coming to theaters soon. What can you tell us about this new movie that I and so many Tron fans can't wait to see?
This is, I think, what I can say and maybe should say. Sean, Justin, Jeff, Jared, and Emma, my fellow producers, all much younger than me, are shedding a sort of a new light on the themes of Tron. They're asking, will our tech bring out the best or worst in us the way we did? But they're asking what the new limitations might be in respect to AI that need to be overcome by us, that the AI may be trying to overcome. I think they've created a really moving story that works. I believe it's a very relevant story. And Jared Leto isn't just putting on an act. He has dreamed of being part of the digital world since 1982. And he knows this territory as well as anyone. How many actors do you know that climbed the Empire State Building? I mean, Jeff Bridges is a fearless actor, but he never did that. And our director, Joachim Roening, is a born director and storyteller. This is what the guy lives for. He is relentless when it comes to capturing the highs and lows of what it means to be a human or maybe not human. I think of it like Epcot, experimental prototype cinema of tomorrow. We can thank Disney for that.
My guest today was Tron writer and director Steven Lisberger. Intro and theme music by me. Water, music, and Tron action by Wendy Carlos from the original motion picture soundtrack for Tron. Support this podcast at patreon.com/ddprogram. You can find this and other episodes at iotower.com or wherever you listen to podcasts by searching for the i/o tower. Thank you for listening, and until next time, end of line.